Something happened during our debates about how to respond to Khobar that almost made that debate a foregone decision for all-out war with Iran. On a hot summer night, just 3 weeks after the bombing of Khobar Towers, the Coast Guard and the Air Force were conducting a joint nighttime search and rescue exercise off Long Island using cutters and aircraft. At 8:31, many in the exercise saw a huge fireball in the sky east of the island at about 15,000 feet. It was TWA 800, a 747 from Kennedy Airport on its way to Paris. There were 230 people on board. Shortly after 9 p.m., the counterterrorism security group met via secure video conference. Racing in from Virginia, I dreaded what I thought was about to happen. The Eisenhower option, invading Iran. The FAA was at a total loss for an explanation. The flight path and cockpit communications were normal. The aircraft had climbed to 17,000 feet. Then there was no aircraft. A few weeks later, with John O'Neill, I went to a giant hangar in Bethpage, Long Island, where NASA had originally built part of the Apollo moon mission. The 747 that had been TWA 800 was being rebuilt. O'Neill urged me to wander around, talk with the technicians. I stopped to ask one technician what he was doing. "Looking to see the pitting and the tear," he explained. "See, a bomb causes a certain type of pitting on the metal nearby, little bumps, and a bomb causes sharp tear lines where the metal separates." "So, this piece is from near where the bomb exploded?" I asked. "Where on the plane was it?" "The explosion was just forward of the middle, below the floor of the passenger compartment, below row 23. But it wasn't a bomb," he added. "See the pitting pattern and the tear? It was a slow, gaseous eruption from inside." "What's below row 23? I asked, slowly sensing that this was not what I thought it was. "The centerline fuel tank. It was only half full. Might have heated up on the runway and caused a gas cloud inside. Then, if a spark, a short circuit," he indicated an explosion with his hands. The FBI concluded in November 1997 that there was no evidence of a criminal act. In May 1998, the National Transportation Safety Board ordered inspection and possible replacement of fuel tank wiring insulation on 747s. Unfortunately, the public debate over the incident was clouded by conspiracy theory. Conspiracy theories are a constant in counterterrorism. Conspiracy theorists simultaneously hold two contrary beliefs. A, that the United States government is so incompetent that it can miss explanations that the theorists can uncover. And B, that the United States government can keep a big and juicy secret. The first belief has some validity. The second idea is pure fantasy. Dismissing conspiracy theories out of hand, however, is dangerous. I learned early on in my government career not to believe that the government experts knew it all. For that reason, too, in 1996, I asked the senior director for counterterrorism at the NSC staff, Steve Simon, to drive over to the Georgetown townhouse of Pierre Salinger. The former White House press secretary had publicly claimed to have evidence that TWA 800 was shot down. Simon was gone for a long time. When he returned, he looked like someone who had been on a far more difficult and frustrating mission than a 2-mile drive to a fashionable Washington neighborhood. "What the hell happened to you?" I asked after Simon stormed into my office and stood silently steaming, his arms folded across his chest and a look of intense disgust on his face. Finally, he blurted out, "Plucky Pierre is whacked. He's lost it. The real world is a planet he left long ago."